Tensions over the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem Al-Quds continue to flare. Palestinians are still reeling from the Israeli crackdown on the Day of Rage on Friday, during which protests were staged against Israel's restrictive measures at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. While Netanyahu continues to insist the use of metal detectors and cameras at the entrances of the holy site will continue, Palestinians, activists, and Muslims around the world are viewing these measures as yet another violation of Palestinian rights. So how much worse can the situation get in this battle of wills? Stay with us as we discuss that and more in this edition of The Debate.
Palestinians praying outside the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound as a show of strength in the face of the Israeli regime's intensifying crackdown on the Muslim population in the occupied West Bank. Israel has installed a security camera next to the notorious metal detectors at the entrance to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This after 8 Palestinians were killed by Israeli forces following new security measures at the third holiest site of the Muslim world. Tel Aviv has defied calls to remove the metal detectors, whose installation has triggered the bloodiest confrontations with the Palestinians in years. However, observers believe the detectors and the new restrictions on Palestinian worshippers who visit the Al-Aqsa Mosque are only part of the bigger picture, that is, Israel's plot to Judaize Al-Quds. Tel Aviv has made each and every effort to force the Palestinians out of Al-Quds, with the final aim of declaring the holy city as its capital. Palestinians have put up a strong resistance.
The Palestinians are showing tremendous resistance here. They are forging a degree of unity that's been missing for a long time. You know, during this crisis, there seems to be unity between Fatah, between Hamas, between Jihad and other elements, such that the Palestinians are in quite a strong position. And the Israelis may be forced to retreat.
Israel has also consistently grabbed Palestinian land for the purpose of expanding its settlements, which are all illegal under international law. The Israeli Prime Minister, on a recent visit to Europe, demanded that European countries accept, quote, Israel as it is, a settler regime. As Israel presses ahead with its expansionist policies, Arab states stick to their policy of paying lip service to the cause of Palestinians. Stopping short of condemning Israel's intensified crackdown on Palestinians, the Arab League says Israel is playing with fire in Al-Quds, which the organization calls a, quote, red line. Meanwhile, the UN Security Council plans to meet on Monday to discuss the bloodiest Israeli-Palestinian violence in years. Sweden, Egypt and France requested the meeting to urgently discuss de-escalation in Al-Quds.
The fact that the issue hasn't been resolved and it's been going on for decades and decades now, you know, you can stem all of the anti-Western resentment in the Muslim world largely from the unresolved issue in Palestine.
But prospects for any action against Tel Aviv at the world body are bleak, as the new US administration, like its predecessors, has thrown its full weight behind the occupier regime. To destroy everything
in their- Well, we're now showing you live images from Jerusalem Al-Quds. As you can see, Palestinians out there in large numbers. They have been refusing to enter the compound since the restrictive measures have been placed by the Israeli regime, praying outside. What you're seeing right now is people on the streets right outside the Jerusalem, the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, having just finished their congregational prayers outside the compound. We'll bring you, of course, all the details and developments from Jerusalem Al-Quds. However, let me introduce the guest for this edition of The Debate. Joining us from Madison via Skype is Karen Barrett. He's the editor of Veterans Today. And joining us from Richmond is Frederick Peterson. He's a political commentator and senior U.S. congressional advisor. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us here on Press TV. Now, Mr. Barrett, I'll start off with you, if I may. Now, Mahmoud Abbas has frozen security cooperation with Israel, and this is after negotiations with Israel fell apart, and the Palestinian Authority's chief negotiator was also arrested. Is this the level-headed, determined, and responsible approach that Netanyahu was speaking about?
Well, speaking the word level-headed in the same breath with Netanyahu is a joke. Netanyahu is one of the most extremist ideologues on earth. And obviously this so-called security cooperation between the Palestinian Authority and the Zionist occupation regime should never have been established, and it should have been broken off long ago. Alan Hart, the former BBC lead correspondent from Palestine, who was a close friend of Yasser Arafat, Golda Meir, and many other top leaders on both sides, has pointed that this so-called security cooperation is essentially just a way for the Israelis to oppress the Palestinians with this thin veneer of supposed Palestinian self-rule that doesn't really exist. Abbas and the Palestinian Authority have largely been puppets of the Zionists and the people who are providing their international funding, who are supporters of the Zionists. So the Palestinian Authority long since should have repudiated the so-called peace process, which does not exist, which is a scam that the Israelis imposed to try to steal Palestine. The Israelis have continued to expand settlements ever since this so-called peace process began. And now they have well over 500,000 settlers squatting on land that every single major government in the world agrees belongs to the Palestinians. And those more than 500,000 settlers obviously will never leave. So there will never be a two-state solution. It's time for everyone to recognize this, and most people actually do it in one way or another. So in a sense, this is a step forward, that the so-called Palestinian Authority is no longer going to be serving as the stooge of the Israelis in oppressing their own people, but that should be permanent, not temporary.
Right.
And Netanyahu is obviously trying to provoke a wider war in the Middle East. The world needs to be on guard against that.
Right. Now, Mr. Peterson, I'd like to get your opinion on this as well. Do you think that Netanyahu's measures have been, as he has described them, level-headed and responsible? Because we've already seen 6 Palestinians killed, as well as almost 30 arrested in the West Bank. And the anger is still rife on the streets of Jerusalem al-Quds.
Well, first of all, let's say that to call Netanyahu one of the most extremist, violent individuals on the face of the earth is to reveal not really a very objective starting point for analysis. Netanyahu is a head of state who is surrounded by and has in its midst significant elements and surrounded by, vastly outnumbered by many, not all, certainly not even a majority perhaps, but many who would like him and his state erased from the face of the earth. Now, what is a responsible leader, vice the most extremist ideologue on the face of the earth, what is a responsible leader to do in the face of irresponsible threats, threats followed by incoming artillery, missiles, terrorist events, murders on the street? There is a primary obligation that any leader has to his people or her people and to order and discipline within the state itself. And
now, Mr. Peterson, let me just remind you that Israel is considered an occupying power in East Jerusalem al-Quds, and any act of what you are describing as terrorism is actually self-defense, which is enshrined in international law for the Palestinians.
Well, let's remember that the occupied territories, as we popularly refer to them, many popularly refer to them, were occupied how? Not by an aggression on the part of Israel, but by self-defense.
Yes, by a war of aggression.
Excuse me?
Yes, it was a war of aggression. It was pre-planned. That's been fully revealed. All the Zionist leaders have admitted that they started the war.
And then we can have a conversation where we talk over one another?
Go ahead, Mr. Peterson.
Is that the kind of debate that you're looking for? All right. What we're talking about here is a self-defense of good order and discipline within the borders of a state that were acquired in an aggressive war conducted against Israel to erase it from the face of the earth and in order to attain the security that is necessary in order for that state to continue.
All right, Mr. Barrett, I'd like to get your response to that. Israel is occupying Palestinian land beyond the 67 borders, that is, of course, because it tries to enact self-defense.
Frederick Peterson, please do provide me with your email address, and I will send you a long list of quotes from the Israeli leaders in charge in 1967, General Peled, the whole Israeli leadership then has admitted that this was a war of aggression. They've admitted that they knew that nobody was going to attack them. Nasser wasn't going to attack them. They engineered it as a land grab. This is now, they've all admitted it. And I will send you those quotes and I will prove it to you, and you will have to come back on the show and admit that I'm right. But in the meantime, the fact is that Israel is an occupying power. And as an occupying power, it has certain duties under international law. And one of them is, of course, to end the occupation as soon as possible. And it has shown no inclination to do that. And secondly, the occupied population, as we've heard, does have the right enshrined under international law to militarily resist occupation. The Palestinians have every right to pick up every weapon they can get a hold of and fight their occupiers until the occupiers leave. Do you dispute that that is international law or not?
You claim that the Israeli wars were wars of aggression, not wars of self-defense. That is utterly fanciful. And they invited thousands of Egyptian tanks to cross the desert, intent on erasing the Israeli state. This was
the Egyptians did not cross
in Israel.
The border. Did not cross the border. Israel initiated the hostilities. Every major Israeli leader at the time has admitted that.
Sir, where? Really?
I will send you the references. I have a long list of quotes from Israeli leaders admitting that they initiated the war.
Right, Mr. Peterson, let me just jump in there so we can move this conversation along. Now, under international law, the Israeli control of East Jerusalem al-Quds is illegal. And based on that, a territory that Israel has basically no sovereignty over the territory of East Jerusalem al-Quds. So its measures of putting cameras or metal detectors or talking about security in East Jerusalem al-Quds does not equate to anything that is logical, because Israel doesn't have sovereignty under international law over that area of Jerusalem.
I understand your point, and that is a valid point of view from one perception, from one perspective.
From the perspective of international law.
Well, yes. And if international law declared that you didn't have a right to defend yourself, you would be in violation of international law should you carry pepper spray in your pocketbook. But what we're talking about is not continued aggressive acts on a part of Israel to acquire territory around it, but rather holding a buffer from which very hostile, not just statements, but hostile aggressive acts have been and are being, and in all likelihood will be, if not accelerated, will continue into the future against the state. Without the occupation of these areas on the border, you would see that the battlefield would be in Israel itself. And I would say that as a result of the fruit of victory in a war, having your forward lines of defense actually forward is perhaps technically illegal, yes, by definitions, but it is also quite practical and quite understandable.
Right. Now, Mr. Barrett, Mr. Peterson speaks of a buffer. Go ahead, Mr. Peterson, very quickly if you can.
I was about to agree with the other half. The other half is that the Israelis can and have, I believe, and others objectively say, have gone too far, have gone so that their self-defense has become in itself a provocation. This is a very fine line indeed. They do have, I hope that we all would agree, a right to preserve, protect, and defend their home state.
Right. The now, Mr. Barrett, Mr. Peterson spoke of a buffer in order to protect and preserve, as he to use his words. However, we already know that at least 15,000 more settlement homes are being built in Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Now, this is not a buffer zone. This is land grab, according to many.
Of course, the idea that this land grab in the Holy City is the establishment of some kind of military buffer zone is a joke. That's not the case. What we have here, Mr. Peterson, is obviously a religious war. It's a war by, well, the a sizable proportion of the world's 15 million Jews against the world's 2.5 billion Christians and the world's 1.7 billion Muslims. You know, that means, Mr. Peterson, that out of all the people who revere Jerusalem and revere the prophet Abraham, peace upon him, and upon all the prophets, of all the Middle Eastern monotheists on earth, about roughly 300 of them are non-Jewish, and one of them is Jewish. One out of 300 are Jewish, and yet these people, or a percentage of them, with unbelievable chutzpah, aggression, bloodthirstiness, and greed, have invaded land that is holy to a vast number of people other than themselves, and they've shown no respect whatsoever to the rights of those others. And what's happening in the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the oldest and greatest Islamic architectural monument on earth, and the spot that enshrines Islam's right to consider itself the final version of Middle Eastern monotheism and to peacefully encompass the entire world of Middle Eastern monotheism and treat other monotheists as equals and protect their religious freedom, which is largely what Muslims have done in the Holy Lands ever since Islam existed. This holy city, Al-Quds, has been Islamically administered ever since Islam existed, essentially, with a couple of brief bloody interludes when crusaders came and made blood flow in the streets. And that's what's happening today. These are the worst of all of the crusaders who have stolen and shed blood in this land. These are the Zionist crusaders who are trying to spread abominations in the Holy Land. And the people behind the Zionist movement, Mr. Peterson, are not 19th century European nationalists looking for a way to preserve Jews against anti-Semitism. That's just the public relations line. The reality, sir, is that this is a fanatical, extremist, heretical religious movement coming out of people like Shabtai Zvi and Jacob Frank, the false messiahs who said it's time for Jews to shed blood, commit abominations, and steal the Holy Land from the Christians and the Muslims.
Okay.
And and we are going to do that even though God prohibits us from doing that.
Okay,
that is
Mr. Peterson, I know you have
Zionism,
a response,
sir.
There, but in order to keep the conversation going, you spoke of provocations. Now, it was the year 2000 when Ariel Sharon entered the Holy site of Al-Aqsa Mosque, accompanied by some 1,000 Israeli forces, and he reiterated Israeli claims over Jerusalem, the Greater Jerusalem, as they call it. Now, his actions unleashed what is now known as the Second Intifada, which led to the killing of more than 3,000 Palestinians. Do you see the parallels between that and what is happening right now?
I do see that there is a very volatile mixture of religion, national interest, sectarian hatreds that go very far back. And to go back and quote the Crusades and somehow present one side as being pure and good and holy and peaceful, and another side as being the incidentally the side from which the other gentleman's heredity comes from, as being the evil, diabolical side, is really to discredit your own position to have a further accurate, trustworthy, just analysis of what's going on. What I am saying merely is that there are rights of Islamists, rights of Christians, rights of Jews that exist in that very sacred area to all three religions, and in fact to world history, that need someone there to protect those religious rights. There are also national rights to survival and security and peace and prosperity. that are to be considered, and those are not just on the Jewish side, they're on the Jewish neighbor's side as well.
Right.
It is, I really rue the inability of the more peaceful, longer reaching sides to sit down and for emotion and one-sided analysis and fanciful history to take over and to corrupt the debate. What we need is a genuine reaching for peace in that area.
Okay.
Not a Jewish peace, not a Palestinian peace, not an Iranian peace. Not, what is needed is a world peace brought to that area.
Okay, we just have a little of one minute left. Mr. Barrett, I'll give you the closing remarks here. Mr. Peterson here mentioned civic rights and religious rights that need to be preserved. But when you speak to Palestinians, it's interesting. They're always demanding human rights.
Yeah, actually, I agree with some of those sentiments. It's, I suppose, rare when I agree with Mr. Peterson, but I do agree that given that we all have our own religious perspectives, our own worldview perspectives, and our own views of history, what we have to do is kind of sit down and find a way to allow for the other's rights also to be respected and perhaps make some compromises. But it's clear that in this situation, the side that isn't doing that is the Zionists. The world has a very clear solution to this problem, and it's enshrined in a long series of UN resolutions going all the way back to 1948. And this UN solution, as unjust as it is to Palestinians, is the solution that probably should be pursued, which is the absolute and unconditional right of return to their homes of all of the Palestinian ethnic cleansing victims all the way back to 1948.
Okay, I'm going to have to stop you there. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. But I am glad that we are finishing this debate off on an agreement, a note of agreement, which is very rare if our viewers know what I'm talking about. With that, we come to an end of the debate. I'd like to thank Kevin Barrett, editor of Veterans Today, joining us from Madison. And joining us from Richmond was Frederick Peterson, a political commentator and senior U.S. congressional advisor. Gentlemen, thank you very much for participating in this edition of the debate. From me and the entire team here in Saravan, it's goodbye.